This is Shabane. We'll just have open up a bit with a few words, and then we will then allow the HDA to introduce themselves and do the presentation. Over to you, Tidisha.
Let us close our eyes. Oh, sorry. Madam Chair,
can you leave that for Reverend Mayana to close?
Madam Chair, the three entities that will appear before you this morning also reporting to the ministry. The Housing Development Agency, as members are aware, created in terms of the Housing Development Agency Act, very critical role player in the delivery chain in human settlements, more on the cold face. The report will be presented. The CEO is here with his team. Similarly, the Estate Agency Affairs Board, I see the acting CEO is here with the team. I also note, Chairperson, that the CISOS is here, Advocate Litele and the team are here. Madam Chair, I must point out that the department remains resolved in strengthening the operations of the entities across the board, including the three that are here before you today. I'm sure the committee will be briefed on the performance, achievements, and challenges encountered by these entities, and the committee will interact with the institutions accordingly. Madam Chair, I won't say much. I'm sure the respective teams will get into the substantive matters of their operations as directed by the committee. The department is also remains here. The CFO is here. The DG has indicated, has registered his apology, but the department is well represented today, Madam Chair. Thank you very much. As well as the ministry, my apology.
Thank you very much, CTG. Without any then waste of time, we hand over to the CEO of HDA. He will introduce his team and then bring to the presentation.
Thank you, Chair. As usual, I think we really appreciate the support that we get from the department, the CDG, the CFO, and other colleagues. I'm joined by Ms. Tembo Khosijani. She is responsible for performance management in the HDA. She's representing our executive responsible for overall performance management is on leave. And we also joined by Mr. Brian Chapwok, who is not from the EAP, and now our acting CFO of the HDA. Chapters now really take you through, I'll concentrate much on the performance and allow Brian maybe just to go through the headlines in terms of our financials. I believe that we would want us to be much more direct and help you achieve your objectives sooner rather than later, where that some of you might be heading to heaven later this afternoon. Chair, I won't dwell much on the vision statement. I mean, this is the normal format that you get when you present your annual financial statements and your annual reports. Those are stated and are contained in the hard copies. I'm also going to make an assumption that the members have had a copy or sight of our full report and has ample opportunity to go through our annual financial statements and our annual report. Maybe just to remind ourselves that we always say that if you work for the HDA or associated with the HDA, and we also hope that members of the of Parliament and this particular committee would be at any time on top of these seven things that We've set ourselves up, we've put up on our mandate, and we've put up on our protocols with the ministry and the executive, that these are the seven things that we'll be held accountable for, and these are the seven things that we want to achieve as the agency. We'll continue being responsible for assets and land for human settlements. We'll up our game in terms of packaging projects and packaging deliverables on the ground. We'll establish delivery partnerships, not only with the private sector, but mainly with the private sector, but there are also non-government organizations that will continue partnering with. We'll continue mobilizing, coordinating, and investing funds on behalf of the public sector. And when we say the public sector, it's not just the human settlements. Our ambition, your ambition for us, is that we should be able to gather resources wherever they are, whether they're in the Department of Energy, the Department of Water Affairs, the Department of Transport, within governments, that our role is not about building houses, it's about developing human settlements, it's about building towns, and whenever there are resources to be mobilized across government, that will play that role, that coordinated role. We'll facilitate the resolution of blockages. Not all blockages are directly affecting us, but there might be blockages where we might be asked to intervene. We've been asked to intervene in a number of municipalities, as you know, from Lele to Swane to smaller municipalities in Limpopo, the Northwest, and other places, where blockage might be relating just to procurement or confirmation issues, or a blockage might be relating to housing delivery, or some planning, or valuations, or application, acquiring land. We'll play a monitoring and implementation support role. I think largely that the departments work, but we will help in putting together key performance indicators that can be used to assess change. But more importantly, that we will hopefully be that platform where you can use, you yourselves as the minister, can use to ensure that the sector is transformed and empowered. Transformation in terms of ownership, in terms of the demography of industrialists over time, but also transformation in terms of the type of the supply industries that we manage, but also transformation in terms of the technology and the innovation, new building materials, new building approaches, etc. That's the transformation that we want to see in the sector. I thought I should dwell on these seven, because that's how we expect to be assessed and evaluated over time. These are the MTSS targets, as you know them. They've been approved since the dawn of this administration in 2014, and we also will be reporting against them. I won't dwell much into this slide at this moment, but we've got some high numbers that were indicating there. 18,000 hectares of land, 9 IGR agreements with all 9 provinces. We have a master spatial plan that was developed, and we've got numbers in terms of catalytic projects, mining towns, and informal settlements. And we'll go a bit into detail on that. These are our performance highlights. I don't want to dwell on this one yet because I think it's much better to report against these highlights, and there'll be maybe 2-3 slides down the line that will take us back on our achievement against our macro indicators. Just on the national priority programs, Chairperson, these are the 3 programs that we run. The catalytic projects, informal settlements, and mining towns. This slide just describes for us what the intention is, and the following slide then will start talking about the achievements so far. So catalytic projects, we all know these are broad, mega, large, high-impact projects spread across the country. Informal settlement upgrading is designed to provide technical and capacity support for those areas that can be upgraded to a point where they are converted from just being informal to some level of formality, also maybe to transition them into areas where there could be a decent human settlements that can be built for our people. Mining towns, there are a number of the mining towns that have been designated within the DMR and the presidency in the IMC. And the objective of the settlement component of the intervention requires that the transformation of these mining towns is not just also about creating sustainable human settlements for mining employees, but for communities and towns within which those mines are located. Other catalytic projects, Chair President, I believe we'll be invited back here very soon to give you a detailed input by project, by municipality, by province on each other, every one of these towns, and we're looking forward to doing that. I think we're now in a position to do that. But in the Eastern Cape, yes, there's Buffalo City and the Metro, Nelson Mandela Metro in the main, where we're looking at the 2,000 opportunities in Buffalo City. Just one of them, I think the key one would be Duncan Village, as you might know. And we're looking at the 9,000 job opportunities at this stage. Nelson Mandela Bay, we've got five precincts that we're looking at that will yield about 62,000 housing opportunities. In the Free State, becoming Mangaung and Mitimaholo, and those are the numbers there, and the job opportunities for those three municipalities, one each for those. We hope that when the next time we report, we'll also be including at least two from Mangaung that have been processed as part of the 48, or maybe adding to the 48 that has already been approved by MINMEC. Gauteng, that's where the bulk is, for obvious reasons. I think that's where the highest absorption of migration in the country has been suffered or experienced or enjoyed. Four in the city of Joburg, four in Swani, five in Ekurhuleni, one in west and one in the south, and those are the numbers there. KZN, most of them are in the Echagwini complex, with just two outside Echagwini, one in Mpambi and one in Newcastle. What the Guza, yes, I think the proximity sometimes makes us forget that what the Guza is outside Echagwini in the technical sense, I mean in the real sense. Mpopo, Lephalale and Polokwane, and in Mpumalanga we have just one in Malateni. In the northwest, we have two, one in Matosani and one in Rustenburg. Katakonyani, Salt Lake, and Sakabani in the northern Cape. And again, a quite significant number in the western Cape. That's the summary that we have 706 housing opportunities. And this is over time, this is not over the medium term. I think this over time, we're looking at a 20-year period that we'll be able to achieve those numbers. And these are the number of job opportunities that we are anticipating. We thought maybe we should just give us an example of just how far. There are three levels of progress that was recorded, I think, over this year that we're reporting on and the current year that we're in. We have now very clear that there's a significant number of them, not quite significant, but there's still a number of them that are still at concept stage. And at conceptual stage, these are ideas that have been put on the table either by a municipality or by a province, but there hasn't been much planning and much implementation that has happened. Those we call category A. Category B are those that have been conceived and passed in planning, and they are almost at the implementation stage. Category C are those that are being implemented. So as at the 31st of March, we were beginning to get a fair idea of that, but as at the second quarter of this year, we will now be able to, and when we do our quarter two report to yourselves, we'll be able to give you details. But Marapong is one of those that has gone through all three. It has been conceived, it has been planned, and there's already work happening on the ground, and we thought maybe we could show some pictures here where you can see services being laid out in terms of basic services, water and sanitation being laid out. We already have units being put up at different levels, at ground floor, there are platforms, there are foundations that have been built, and some of them are at rooftop level already, and some of them have reached completion stage. We also want to demonstrate that, I think this is a slide that adds to what I was saying earlier on, about making this transition from just being a housing development agency, but hopefully becoming a human settlement agency, that over the next 2 years, we want to be able to make that transition and be measured on our ability to build human settlements and not just our ability to build a house. N2 Gateway, I think this is our flagship project from both sides. on the successes side and on the challenges side. We've had numerous challenges. I think we've been now with this project for more than 10 years, but it has been drawing lessons for us, and we're transferring those lessons to other projects as we go along. We have a target now to complete and make sure that this project is completed, signed off, sealed by the end of 2018, and it's really quite a large one. We thought maybe we could also take into the distribution of our 22 mining towns. I'm not sure if members are able to see the color scheme there on the board. Those that are green and are green sectors there are those that we think are completed. Completed in this sense, it means that we have fully fledged spatial transformation plans that have been developed. The yellows will be in progress and the reds we haven't started yet. So in the northwest, for instance, Matlosan is complete. We have a complete spatial transformation plan in Rustenburg and in Madibe. We're still working on Moses Kwatani, and we still have some way to go with Kheke and Rafir, which covers the area south of Rustenburg. In Limpopo, most of them are complete, except for Elias Mukwaneli. In Mpumalanga, we're still working on Thaba Tshweu, the rest are complete. In Gauteng, that's where the red flag is. Members from Gauteng, I think, would want to help us push a bit on that. Mokhale City, Western Area, Randfontein, and Rafo, there hasn't been much progress that we've been making in Gauteng. Much having the Free State is complete, and in the Northern Cape, it's only Katelope, where we still need to do a bit of work. On informal settlement upgrading, we have a total of 356 informal settlements that were serviced in six provinces during the financial year up to the 31st of March 2017. And the numbers are there again that are broken down per province. I won't go through them. 19 in Mpopo, 116 in Gauteng. The next large number would be in Mpumalanga, where we have 97, and 72 in the northwest. Then if I go into programs, Chairperson, this is our performance against our macro indicators. And remember, I skipped that initial slide that was just showing the highlights, and I thought this could be much more useful to show where we have achieved and where we have underachieved, and these are audited performance statements that we're making here. But in terms of your normal monitoring and evaluation of reports against our indicators based on the master spatial plan, it's one of those reports where personally I would have said, no, we can't just measure ourselves against the number of reports. Quality of the report, I think, in future that we want to look at. But we've had two monitoring reports that have been approved and that have indicated that we've met our targets. In terms of the hectares, yes, we've achieved our target then that we've had 6,288 hectares of well-located land released. We're not too happy about our achievement in terms of our national priority programs. Although we have achieved 356 informal settlements, we put it in that color because we think that it's one thing to say that we've achieved doing your informal settlement upgrade, but the big challenge going forward would be then what you do. Once you've done your informal settlement upgrade and support, what's the next step? And it's the next step that we think going forward this portfolio committee would want to push us a bit on. I've reported on the number of transformation plans, and we think we've achieved on that. On this slide, let me concentrate on those that I think we're underachieving on. One is the implementation of support provided to projects and programs. We had a target of 2,866 housing units. These are top structures that we're supposed to produce. We've only managed to produce about 1,335 in the Western Cape. 2,616 in the Eastern Cape, only 379 in Limpopo, and that gives us a total of 4,320 housing units as opposed to the 6,112 units that we were supposed to achieve during that year. Not that bad, but 2,000 units less, it means that we are denying 2,000 times 5, I think we have about 10,000 people proper shelter, if you look at it in that context. We look just at the numbers and say, look, it's not a best achievement, it's achieved 4,000 out of 6,000.
Advocate, please tell.
Then where we really feel that we've really underachieved is on civil sites. We had a baseline of 654, which was low. We pushed ourselves up to 9,589. We only achieved 1,250 civil sites. We still think that we could do more in terms of producing civil sites. It varies from province to province. In some provinces, we've done and overachieved. Gauteng is a bit difficult for us to measure, because at the beginning of the year, we don't get sites, don't get units. They come mid-year, so it's not easy for owners for us to be able to set targets. But we have achieved a lot more in terms of units and targets in Gauteng. We included those as part of our original targets. We have been disingenuous, but it could have pushed our delivery targets a bit higher. So if you look at then the program administration, yes, so these are your support functions. The CFO will talk a bit more about our audit outcomes. I won't dwell into those. Safe to say that, again, we got this term clean audit, I think, with the current discussions in the audit industry. I'd rather say that we've had an audit without qualifications, but with a few matters of emphasis. I'm sure that would be the right technical word to use. That they are presented as fair, as material, be correct, and that our financial position is sound, and the CFO can expand on those. Just in terms of corporate services and administration, we've met our targets. All positions are filled in terms of what was approved and what was put through to the board. Our reports in terms of evaluation and the performance work that Debo and Chase do, that we have met our targets, our KPIs, met our meet our performance, and our performance meet the type of required outputs and outcomes that the organization has set themselves up in terms of its business plan and its performance, AAT, I mean, other performance plans and all that. And these are the numbers again in terms of our national programs. I've indicated already where the red lines are, but just in terms of meeting our performance, we have largely met most of our performance requirements there. We've supported 50 catalytic projects. There are 99 that are still to be processed. 48 have already been approved by MINMEC for implementation, and that could rise to about 50 before the end of this financial year. And the red flags are already flagged. They cover especially Nelson Mandela. I mean, if you go into that level of detail there, maybe starting with the Zalimbula, that again, we've achieved 2,616 as opposed to 2,652. The N2 gateway in two parts, the service sites, we've done well there, but we still rank a little short on the top structures. We had a target of 1.4 and we've achieved 1.3 in N2. Nelson Mandela Bay, yes, there are lots of mitigating factors in most of the red ones. We can discuss some of the mitigations and some of the causes, unrest and failure to pay contractors on time and those types of issues that might have hindered us meeting our targets. So lucky, having had long processes in terms of getting approvals and getting work happening, and then there are a lot of pre investigations and clearing up of projects before they hit the ground that we have to worry about. Getting geotech signed up, getting NHPRC enrollments done, getting a whole lot of beneficiary-related issues sorted out before we get on the ground. And in most cases, where you see the rest in terms of services and the top structures, you find that the lead time to get us to a point where we can get contractors starting on time would be some of the major considerations to make. Let me just hand over to Brian, maybe to take us through some of the financial highlights.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, committee. Again, it's very good to be able to present that the HDA has got a qualified audit opinion. In fact, it's a clean report. We don't have any findings that auditors needed to mention within the report. And I think it's important from a governance perspective, the organization is growing. Its mandate is significantly expanding as going to be the developer of choice. And clean administration with good internal controls is going to be something that the portfolio committee will be keeping us accountable for going forward. In terms of our financial statements, the financial position of the organization is quite healthy. We have our land inventory that we keep, and it's our responsibility to also come to the committee with our land banking strategy, which we'll present. Then also in terms of all the project fundings that we receive, that we account for those, and also indicate what it is that we are, what assets are we delivering as a CEO as responsible in terms of that. In terms of our current liability, we can indicate what our project payables are, what it is that we are, as a project manager for the various provinces, what we're doing with the fundings, and our project obligations. Also the matching land inventory funding that is matching the land that we have acquired on behalf of the other provinces and municipalities. From the financial statement of performance, our funding that we get from the department to cover all our operating structure, we have created a resourcing framework to see how the organization must grow so and capacitate itself to actually serve all the various needs of us as a developer of choice. As the CEO indicated, we do want to be able to serve any of the needs of the public sector in the whole when it comes to the big projects as a whole. Our operating expenses are in line with our plans and project services. We do receive project management fees from the municipalities for all the work we are doing for them, and that we also accounted for here. Our employee cost is also in the ratio that we expect it to be from a staffing perspective. We will be able to make use of more money, and for the bigger mandate that we have in mind, it's important for this organization to be prioritized when it comes to funding so that we can achieve the bigger goals that we can as a developer of choice. So we also request that from the portfolio committee continue support to the organization as we have been receiving. Believe that we can make a very big difference in the human settlements in the role that we are actually designed by the Act to play for the human settlements family. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, HDA. That's the report, Honorable Lema, from the Housing Development Agency. I think I'm opening it up for questions of clarity and questions generally. You're right?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I want to upfront welcome the presentation. SDA is one of those entities that always give us quite a very informative talk. Is this my mic?
Yes, it is. It is, yeah.
Maybe cell phone check as well.
So I hope there's no something about some time. Can I continue, Chair?
Yes, you can.
Yeah. So I was indicating that HDA is one of our entities that we're quite proud of.
is huge. Have lot of money. It must get more land. In particular, from the private sector. I hope you are gaining skills to negotiate to get land without really paying. You put reasons. For example, the mining. How do you pay for land in the mining? The land that was from us anyway. It was land that in return is used for their own employees or the descendants of their employees. So, I'm saying that's the area that I know you are moving. So just to motivate you, because your report is disempowering, that we don't really have a way of whipping you. You seem to be doing a good job. So starting with the fact that in spite of you having big money, but you are able to account for the money. So the Auditor General is able to say to us is happy on how you are reporting. So you understand the art. So we must appreciate that, Chairperson. Maybe it's because your CEO is Muloi. You never know. It's a big money like this, but you come clean. So we are quite proud. But you did indicate that there are some problems in terms of failure to pay in time in some areas. You mentioned PE, but I do know that it happens elsewhere. You know, Pascal, that in Northwest, so we had a lot of problems there where conductors used their money to develop, but 6 months down the line they will not be the cent. So it's not a good thing. They'll be managing to be very good in preventing, but on the ground we do get those. You see, for conductors that cannot sustain themselves, if they have managed to put their own funds to do whatever work, and then 5 months they are not paid, they disappear. So I think that's the area where you must improve. So because we want the economy to be enjoyed by our own people who were marginalized in the apartheid era. Now they must get the benefit of a new government. So if you don't pay them even a month, it's a problem. But besides that, Chairperson, I think the entity is quite promising. I like that they say they are a developer of a choice and they are growing. So we wish you well. And show as well that the land that also is in other departments, whether it's Transnet, whether it's Public Works, unutilized land must be utilized, must come back to the utilization. So, Chair, generally speaking, the entity is doing its good work. There will be areas of improvement. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Members. Maybe you would agree, it's very rare that you have very few to say, very little to say. Maybe you should also agree that they are the presenters of choice. Honorable Kaha.
I got worried when UPDG wanted to open with a prayer and a bone good, you know, because he was there. So probably he needed divine intervention. However, Chair, I think let me join Ubabu Menezi in welcoming and appreciating the report. And I think that it's important to note that they've got a clean audit. let me be allowed to use that as a term. Because you know, when an entity has such a huge responsibility, it must be appreciated that public funds are handled with care and such diligence. Moving beyond that, I think it's also important to note that HDA is aware that they are central in, in delivering houses to the masses that don't have roofs over their heads in the country. And for me, to take that as serious as they are doing is quite important. But, you know, we have to say that in areas where we've done oversight and we find that there are issues raised, the first question that we would ask, where is HDA in the center of this? Because they are supposed to be there. And therefore, we have a huge expectation on HDA to make sure that projects run smoothly. They are in the center of making sure that these projects run as they should. So that's the responsibility that we put squarely on the agency in terms of delivery. But clearly, Chair, where they have their hands in projects, there's smooth running thereof. There's less pressure in municipalities. Because remember, the capacity of municipalities varies. Some are able to do or move on their own, but others need hand-holding. And HDA is supposed to be that holder, providing guidance, assistance, support, etc. But just two or three questions, Chair, that I have would be, I did not get clearly what the challenges are in Gauteng. I know that Gauteng is red flagged in certain areas. And I think that the demand in Gauteng, I suppose, is more than any other area in the country. Because people move from all 8 provinces to Gauteng, and therefore, it's obvious that their supply will not be matching the demand. And for Gauteng not to be moving or to be red flagged is a matter of concern. Because an unrest in Gauteng in this country means this country could come to a standstill. And we don't want to get to that point. I would want to hear what the real issues are around Gauteng, so that if, Chair, there's an intervention required from the National Department, from the Portfolio Committee, that is then provided as a means of support to HDA. That's the first one. Secondly, Chair, I noted that in Nelson Mandela Bay, there were issues around non-receipt of funding from the provincial government. Was that resolved? If not, are there still issues? And if there are issues, what would be those issues? And what kind of intervention could be made in order to make sure that, you know, those are resolved? And in Limpopo, I think it's Delabella, if I'm not mistaken, the project was not completed during the financial year. Any specific reason? Any remedial actions in terms of that? What were the causes of the project not being completed within or during the financial year? And lastly, Chair, that's in Solplaki. In Solplaki, the issue raised is around a service provider that was only appointed in February 2017. And for me, I think February 2017 is almost the end of the financial year for a provider to be appointed at that particular time. What were the issues around that? Is that resolved? Is there a way now that we can safely say that it's something that will not happen in the near future? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Baha. Honorable Suli.
Chair, I'll defer to Honorable Baha, but I've covered my point about Limpopo.
You only wanted to ask about Limpopo?
I was biased on that.
Thank you, Chair. I'm joining my colleagues in appreciating the good presentation made by the HPA, by the CEO and the CFO, and congratulating them in obtaining a unqualified with no findings audit. And I think most of our entities are in a good track in terms of audit findings, but there are those that have few findings, and I hope they will assist one another and take along each other to the pressure of having good, clean audit, as it is said that there is no such an accounting language, but nevertheless, we are happy to see that you are striving to get to that, although it's not a formal qualification. Keep up the good work. Don't disappoint us as we go along. The second point, Chairperson, are the catalytic projects. The CEO has made a very good remark to say they are aware that very soon they are going to be invited to come before the portfolio committee, and they are looking forward to that. And in that note, I propose that, Chair, before we are done with them, if practical possible, we give them a date. And then the formal invitation is forward. Because we have been really long awaiting to receive such a detailed Catholic report. But I'm happy today we've been given provinces and we're able to see whether all metros are covered. But over and above metros, the secondary cities. So in the case of Northwest, I'm not sure because of the names. The other provinces, I can see that Northwest Rustenburg is there, Mangaung in Free State, Bomalanga is the first biggest secondary city is there, but my challenge is with Northern Cape. I'm not sure where is Kimberley there, where is what, because of the language of the name of the project. If when you come back, we can just put that in brackets. The M2 gateway is a flagship project. I understand very clear the challenges of an in-situ upgrade and the relocation thereof, that you have to find a greenfield land to relocate, you clean up, you demolish, you clean up, you build, and then relocate, blah, 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 blah. But I think because there was a time where this project was so to speak, maybe if I use the word block, it was not moving. We're happy that it's moving. But because this is now 10 years old, can't we put ourselves, National Department, a timeline to say, I know that the minister, there was a timeline, but within this term. But can't we say at least with all the challenges, by the end of this term of office of us as this portfolio committee and the ministers, this should have been concluded by then. It means sometime 2019, early 2019, the first quarter of 2019, this should have been concluded, if not earlier. Would love to complete it in 2018, in fact, in 2018. But saying complete it in 2018, but before end of the term, early 2019, it should have been completed if it is not there. Then the target, of course, we are not happy that there are the targets that were underachieved. Especially the service sites. We've been going around provinces and we have a discomfort when we come to a rural, so to speak, province, and the number of service sites are very low. Because people in rural areas, they've proven that you give them services, they are able to build even bigger houses than that they are provided by us as a parliament, as government. You just give them what they require, the services, water and electricity, they will do wonders. Type of sewer that is available to, can be provided in that particular land of a rural area, they are able to build a wonderful house for their families. And we want to give them more of that. And we are really not happy at the moment with the pace that we are moving. We know that it's not only yourselves, the provinces are to be blamed, and the municipalities must come to the fore. But as the other colleague indicated, that some municipalities doesn't have much of capacity. And now when we do our oversight visits in provinces, we always say to, if we realize that the municipality doesn't have the capacity, we say, have you utilized HDA? Have you heard of an HDA? Some of them, they are not sure. But the province, the province will say, oh yes, yes, but the municipalities are not very, very sure. So the marketing of yourselves should be also be a scale. Don't rely on provinces to sell you out in the provinces. Even if you are hired by the provinces, we know the implementation protocol and agreements, all those. But just publicize yourself so that the provinces are able to invite you. But we're happy because some provinces, secondary towns, were able to say to us, in the mining program that we have, the project HDA is assisting us, at least. Even in metros, we've seen Abantu in urban areas, if they're given site service, some will say, we don't want you to build us houses, just give us service land. And our service land are far cheaper than the land that is sold by private developers and the financial institution, mortgage and loan, the type of, and our people will come to or flock to buy those from us. And lastly, you are aspiring to become a sole developer for the department. My question is, I heard you and I've read from the report that you have met your target in terms of personnel, you are 100%, but the question would be, are you equally up to the task in terms of capacity? And as we stand, my understanding, my assessment is that you are not. Taking into consideration, if you go to 9 provinces, as I indicated, your footprint in other provinces are just in two municipalities there, with the exception of metros where you are seeing the footprint are more, but in other provinces where there are no metros, you are a little bit thinner, but that's not a criticism because you are growing in the industry. But is it not too early for you to become the sole developer? Taking into consideration the amount of task that you will be faced with. And if you want to do that, have you put a proposal to the minister? Because I know that the minister would want you to do that, but also not just the minister, the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation came with a similar proposal when they presented to us a few days ago. But the question is the practicality of it and the costs that are involved. And you should be able to sustain yourself, not only Kangeza from the National Department, you should be able to generate your own revenue and then plow back on this industry. Thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members. The date has been set for HDA to come in front of the committee. According to our program, they are appearing to us on the 24th of October. Where they are coming to present the catalytic project in detail. But I think now their reasons for coming would be just more than that. I think in their presentation they've also talked about a land banking strategy, which I think it would be important for them to present it on the 24th as well, which they spoke about. One area that for me is important, even if they don't present it on that day, but maybe they can attach it as an agenda. You saying in your presentation that you have upgraded about 356 informal settlements. Even if you don't present it, can you have that list as information? Where are these informal settlements? So that we, even us as members of the portfolio committee, as we go around or ask questions, sometimes we get ambushed by media who are able to respond. So we would like to have that list of 356 informal settlements that you have upgraded. When you come to present the catalytic project, I think it's going to be important. I might have been, I don't know if I heard you correct, but in your presentation you said they are in category A, B, and C, at the conceived stage, at the planning stage, at the implementation stage. And therefore, I'm hoping that that presentation will be able to put them in those categories when we present. And I'm quite happy with that, so that we know how many are already in the implementation stage, how many are still being conceived, so that we are able to be empowered and know that information. One area that has always been worrying me, whilst members are uploading your footprints all over the country in provinces, I would like to have an understanding of, have you managed to sign implementation protocols with municipalities and provinces, formalizing that relationship, so that we, in areas where you're having challenges, we are able to see how then the department and maybe ourselves we can assist. When Shra was presenting on Tuesday, they made a mention of inner city upgrading, and they said they are in discussion with HDA on this project. And I asked the question, how far is this? And they said, we haven't signed an IP yet. It's still a second. So I just want to hear your views on this. Because I think for me it's important, inner city upgrading, particularly in the metro, is a very critical area. So I would like just to hear you saying something about that. We, of course, we quite applaud the unqualified audit. I'm just hoping that, Brian, as you move along to these entities, you don't take the unqualified with you and leave the unqualified. We hope you will hear that. Please don't move with unqualified. Leave unqualified where you are. But we will hear that that hasn't happened. The last part is just on the issue of the facilitating of blockages. I would like to hear more on this, because that's one area that is frustrating us when we move around. The issue of projects not moving as fast as they, different blockages here and there. how are you facilitating? Do you think you are doing well in this area? Because it seems to be one area that is common in all provinces, in all municipalities. So I was quite, I was jumping in my chair when I saw that amongst your jobs you try to do this, to resolve the blockages and help to facilitate. Maybe just a little bit more on that, so that we can be able to also, when we market you as well to those small municipalities, when we say, even if you don't need them for anything, but they will help you with the trying to facilitate the blockages resolution, that kind of thing. So I thought it's important that we hear more of that. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Chair and members. I think at some point we want to talk about, for lack of a better word, member, let's talk about deal making. And just put up a discussion on deal making and how you cut deals to lease land. Mm-hmm. And you ask us whether the government or in the HDA, do we have that capacity? My inclination with Brian and Shaban and Nani in the house would be that we are not that strong in being able to sit on this side of the table and eyeball the market on the other side of the table and be able to cut a deal on strategically related matters. But what we have attempted to do within the ADA to set up a specialized unit to do that, just two people at the moment, go out there, engage with the private developers, the private land and negotiate the best possible deal that would make it possible for us to access to this green completed land. It's not a question of about whether you have money, etc. It's a give and take. Most of us in the room would know that the private sector would always come and say that we've got land, but they would want us to support them with bulk. And then the first thing that they do, they put our poor people on that side of a, of a piece of development. We put up RDP houses there, BNG houses there, we take bulk there, and they make just the links. And that has been the traditional deal that we've been coming across. We want to turn that around and be able to negotiate better. Money is relative. What you see as numbers here, I think, Michelle, I'll always say that it's really nothing. If you want to be a developer of choice, maybe just getting back to the question, jump to the question that Member Kabashi raised, is that it's a process. We are not a developer of choice, as we said now, but we are aspiring, and we are putting plans and our business plans and our engagements with the department and the minister on a day-to-day basis, on a monthly basis. It sees with how we get there, I think. There might be impatience maybe on your part or on the part of the minister to want to see us being there tomorrow. I've used the analogies that are unfortunate, I think, in this meeting in the past, trying to talk about your turnaround and use the process, unfortunately. But the point is that we want to be there. I could just say that at the moment, the way we assess this status quo, that we are just programs in the beginning. We run programs, concrete programs. In some instances, we are beginning to move from being program managers to project managers. Your example about North Australia, in the Northwest, we are now not just a program manager, but we are now getting more involved in the project administration and management of the Jubatin project. We're moving there in the medium term, but in the long term, yes, we have to be developed. And to be a developer, you need money, you need land, and you need lots of money. And you need lots of capacity, you need personnel, you need people. We're only sitting at 179. If you compare ourselves with your big state developers and non-state developers, at least your core staff, you should be looking at 600 employees or 500 employees. So we really still at the early stage, and then we want to grow in that direction. I think maybe the point about Montrosan is a good example about how things run. Okay. You get to a point where you are invited, or where there's a preference shown by either by a province or a municipality. that for whatever lack of capacity, etc., it's best that you engage through an implementation protocol, the HDA, to assist in the rollout of a project. But you don't just come in, Chairperson, and take over. You get a contract. Okay, you have to go through that contract, take it through your own PAC, make sure that there is caution before you even start paying the first invoice. It can take you another 3 months, 6 months or so, but it adds already to a point where that contractor might not have been paid for the previous 6 months. Mm-hmm. So you take that 6 months, that cost the province and the municipality to get to a point where they say they need some intervention from the department, or then the department suggests that they enter into a protocol with that. From the point of getting into that protocol with us, it will take another 3 months. And I'm happy to say that to date, we have been able to honor close to about 8+4, 12 million of the claims that have made to date. So there's progress. There's still a lot more work to be done. There's still a lot of normalization to be done in terms of contracting, regularizing, and all that. But we think we're on the right track. But that's a typical example across the country, where we would be asked to get into soul plugging very late, make the contractors appointed, or you take Bilabila for instance, that money gets removed, money gets paid back to the HDA, and those legs make it sound like we've not met our target for that year, but if you take into account that money got transferred only in the second quarter, in September, this is the season where some of these transfers are made, they make it impossible for us to be able to get contractors on site on time. Okay? Mm-hmm. But I think in the main, you find that those are the type of delays that we suffer from time to time. Remember, the oversight visits, I always wonder when you go to the North Coast or when you go to Malaga. Those are the two provinces where we don't have physical presence in terms of offices. We don't have an office in Malaga. We have project running there, but we don't have any offices yet. In the North Coast, maybe just to clarify, Member Kabashi, is that Soul Plug is Kimberley, in Kimberley. And so at least the secondary is in the town there. Is being taken care of. The challenges in Gauteng, let me not put it as if it's challenges. There are no problems in terms of our relationship in working with Gauteng. All we're indicating in the annual report is that we cannot put a target. Targets are predetermined. We have a baseline of based on the work that we did before and in the year before. Then you set up a baseline. Your previous year's performance would create that baseline. Then you have the target upfront when you submit your APT. But in the case of Gauteng, unfortunately, we didn't have a number that says this is our target for 2016-17 up to the 8th. So when you look at our targets, you don't have a target for Gauteng. The number and the allocation that came to us from Gauteng came immediately. And it wasn't sufficient for us even to amend our APP to change our target to indicate that we've been achieved in something. But we've produced services in something, we've produced units in something, and the numbers are there. I'm sure if you do an oversight visit in something, almost the rest of the Ekurhuleni region, in terms of size and top structures, most of the structures that you see there would be the work that we've done in the HD. Tudor shafts in Mukhali, 500 units. We've produced units in Mapias, we're producing units in Palm Ridge, we're producing units in McKenzieville and all. But when you look at our annual performance plan, for that year we're accounting for 302 million that came in media. That is not true. It would show on the Gauteng caught as expenditure without units. It will show on our report as units, but not necessarily related to that. It's a question of timing. It doesn't necessarily mean a question of money. But we also, I think we're grateful that there is so much collaboration that involves us, the departments, the three metros at least, the two ministers, I mean the minister and the the mayor there in dealing with the issues and let's say Iraq and in the south of Johannesburg, in the west of Pretoria, etc. I think most of that are well documented and covered in the media. The trenches, yes, there's improvement in the Eastern Cape. We've got a commitment that was entered, and our CFO and the HOD met with the HOD in the Eastern Cape last week. We don't anticipate that we'll have the same scale of problems that we had last year in terms of contractors not being paid, and we try to hold each other accountable to the type of promises that were being made, that we're making between ourselves. So yes, we don't anticipate not being paid on time or getting some of the trenches met on time. Sort of like you have already spoken about. Yes, we will be here on the 24th. Our promise in terms of the land banking strategy was that we can complete it by the end of the third quarter. So the 24th. Let me say that we'll give you whatever draft that we have in terms of our land banking strategy. The entry gateway, we have renegotiated a new contract with the in terms of that contract, there's a new contract with penalties that are involved. And the outside deadline, as it stands at the moment, signed off by the Steercom and also signed off by the departments and the minister, is December 2018. That we don't want any more commitments beyond December 2018. We have a new project steering committee that has been established there. But the problems still remain the same. Your backyarders demanding to be accommodated, and those that have to be moved to decanted area to TRA being very doubtful on whether or not they'll be allowed to come back. That basic pattern hasn't changed. It's been like that, more interdict. Now we have all of the families that crowd out about 200 units for being built. And those type of problems are still there. But despite those problems, we have contracted, I think, much more tightly with the contractor there to make sure that if we don't meet the December 2018 deadline, there will be consequences.
Mm-hmm.
Just the underachievement of targets, Chair. Yes, it's a worrying factor. We're moving from a low base in terms of services. I mean, the HDA annual plans, let's say 2-3 years ago, you'd have had very little on services and top structures. We'd be measured largely around land and housing support.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a growing target that we're getting more and more in the actual delivery of units and services. And we're mindful of that we're pushing ourselves to get to that point. And hopefully we will be able to get to a point where we put realistic targets that can be met. Marketing the HDA, we take the point, yes. I think we're doing well in terms of ISU in mining towns. Yes, it's something that we want to do. We're proposing to the department that it's not just marketing the HDA. The HDA is just the conduit to us at some achievement. We want to market the delivery of the sector.
Yes.
And if we can contribute through the department and the sector communicators what we do as a sector, I think that would be our first prize. The HDA, it doesn't help I think if we can market all of ourselves about what the EAD does, etc.,
yeah,
etc. The first big push that we're making is to start putting up very creative marketing and communication strategies on our company. And we will be making proposals to the department and the minister, hopefully before the end of December. We'll be then saying that this is what we're doing for the next 20 years, this is what we're building, these are the new cities or the new towns or new settlements that we're building. Maybe somewhere in the small print we can say the HDA that we want to see the sector being marketed more than just the HDA. Implementation protocol. most of the administrative ones are completed, are done. I think where we will be making proposals is that we need the political ones to be considered as well, especially the mayors and the ministers and all that. And I think there's a process for us to be able to do that. But despite that, we are satisfied that in every province where we have started this project, we are establishing steering committee meetings. There's already been meeting two in the Free State, KZN. There's continuing meetings in the Western Cape. The Eastern Cape contain meets almost every week now. There's a war room that also involves some of the catalytic projects. So work is happening, I think, at the administrative level. But it's important that we conclude MOEs at the political level as soon as possible. The Shroud Protocol, as far as I know, it's sitting with the council, or it has been presented to council. Maybe you haven't had feedback from Rory yet. But at least at our level, everything is now completed. There were one or two areas of consideration that were done. There was legal advice. There were one or two pieces of land that we're using also as an example to consolidate the agreement. As far as I'm concerned, I'm not sure if you will have more information. It's sitting with the Shra Council, and once the Shra Council approved, there was an approval in principle. I think they wanted us to dot a few I's and cross a few T's, and I don't see why it should be. But it's a very important, I think, protocol for us to enter into. It's not just about inner city development, but can help us also work together with student accommodation, with government employee accommodation, especially where there's a social housing stock that needs to be built that we can collaborate on. There's no standard template on occasions, Chair. It's, in most cases, it's ad hoc, it's interventionist, a requirement to deal with a particular either technical, administrative, or capacity inefficiency. And it'll differ from province to province, from municipality to municipality. The biggest one that you can think about was Nelson Mandela Bay, problems there, and a specific call was made by the executive mayor, Fisher, and the minister responded, and it resulted in the type of the intervention that we've seen there. The smallest one would be just asking us to come in. Can you just come in, work with this department? I mean, well, it's not small, but it was significant. I would use my card as a problem. But for us to be able to transfer and get the CRDU units and the BNG houses completed and transferred in time in Marikani for around December 2016, there was a need for assistance in terms of getting the proclamation done, getting the transfer done. A piece of land was donated by Lonmi, but the process to unlock that required us getting lawyers to come in, sit down with the municipality, with Rustenberg and all that, to facilitate that happening. Small, but I think the impact was high. So it differs from area to area. There's no standard, but that's part of the original intention of the Housing Act, the Housing Development Agency Act, and that's what the support. It's not just about land acquisition, but also about support in terms of planning, in terms of township development, in terms of a whole number of civil, in terms of quantity surveying, in terms of other professional services that especially small municipalities would be lacking on, that would be carried out. I'm not sure if my colleagues would like to add, but I hope also that the department, Joe, would assist where we might have been limited in giving responses.
Thank you very much. Any additional?
So, Chair, just on the informal settlement, on the list, this slide tries to say that to you. Mm-hmm. For instance, it will say in Limpopo, this is the number that we have. We've got 7 in Greater Tuba. I guess your question would say, where in Greater Tuba?
Exactly. Yeah, we want that detail when you come. When you come on the 24th.
So when you come back on the 24th, we'll be able to give you that, maybe also map them, there's a table that's much more detailed on the But I think at a high level, this is the breakdown of the trans.
Mm.
Thank you very much. Any addition? You. Did you?
Madam Chair, just so that we clarify two things. The assembly, it may be useful to point out that what the agency is doing, the 356, is not yet at a point of upgrading, is preparing the plans. So that there is no misaligned expectations. The upgrading will then follow on the basis of those plans.
Okay.
Secondly, Madam Chair, it's important to also, I could hear the questions of the members relating to the blockages. My understanding is that the committee is concerned about the block projects in the main. Whereas what the agency is pointing to is some of the interventions that help and block some of the process issues. It's not necessarily in relation to block projects.
Yeah.
I thought let me draw the distinction there. We may come back to the police, to the committee down the line with this if the committee recalls, the minister made an undertaking about how we are going to deal with block projects. So it's a massive piece of work. We time permitting, we'll have to come back and take the committee into confidence in that regard. Chair, the last issue relates to what the SRA indicated yesterday, the SAVI, how they intend to work with the HDA on the one hand and other entities. Madam Chair, I suppose while the intention is there, all of this contracting has to be resolved and concluded. I don't think it is a question of any one party not wanting to collaborate. It really has to do with the parties having to satisfy themselves that they are on the right side of the law, but also on the right side of their respective mandates and how these two merge. Madam Chair, other than that, I'll leave it there. My apologies.
Okay. No, thank you very much. I think we are fine with those responses, and thank you, HDA. I think the in-depth interaction with yourself will take place when you come back on the 24th.
Mm-hmm.
Suffice to say that even though your annual performance is satisfactory, we are concerned about the fact that in some provinces where you have high visibility, the performance of those provinces, which is not your fault, but the performance of those provinces is not satisfactory. We would like to see a situation where that is turned around. Because remember, if that happens, it affects the entire sector, which is in a segment. But that's something that you'll have an in-depth discussion with yourself when you come back on the 24th. Thank you very much, and keep up the good work. And we hope that you're not going to come back next year the report must improve. It must not backtrack. Thank you.
Thank you.
We are now ready to take the second entity by the name of EAAB, Estate Agent Affairs Board. That's the name of that entity. As you change chairs, Datemolo, you vacate the chairman together with Brian. Together with Tuchane, move. Allow EAB now to take the hot seat. It's hot because there's been people sitting there. It's not hot because. Thank you very much. Okay. Thank you. We are not taking a formal break, so whatever you feel like you can salvage at the best, just do that quietly from the other people in the house, but we're not going to take a break. So
thank you, Chair. My name is Nikki Jessica. I am the Chief Risk Officer of EAB, but also in an acting role as a CEO. With me I have Thomas Makupo, who is also our acting CFO, and also Kwezi Nkwenya, who is our transformation executive.
Who is helping there? Don't do that. That's because they are acting. We don't want to help them.
Don't do that. Don't do that.
You know the rules.
Presentation. We're just going to open up with remarks and highlights and overview from the CEO's report, and then just look at the key elements of the operational and performance review, and then the financial performance, and then the closing remarks and questions. Just before we go forward, I'll be covering just the operational review process, and then Kwezi Nkwenya will cover the MTSF process, and then Thomas will cover the financial. Just to review the highlights from the Chief Executive Officer's report, we acknowledge that the property sector in general has expanded and evolved, and EAB has positioned itself obviously to deal with the challenges that lie ahead, and also what we've noticed is that there's a growth in the secondary residential market simply because there's been construction growth in terms of development, in terms of malls, in terms of parks, schools, etc. And therefore we anticipate to counter that growth and have processes in place. Just a key thing that which we are proud of is just the professionalization of the real estate sector, in the sense that we started our CPD process, continued professional education, as we are now a professional body, and that was started in 2015. And it has a 3-year cycle, so during the period under review, it was the second year of that cycle. And now, in 2017, we're in the final of the cycle. This process is where those who are qualified, who have gone through the training, and also the education, NQF Level 4 for practicing estate agents, and NQF Level 5 for principal estate agents, have to keep up with the necessary skills and trends and practices within the profession, so therefore they have to go through a continuous professional education process. So every year they have to attend certain courses which will give them points, which will qualify to remain a state agency. The crucial thing about it in 2017 is that they have to complete 60 points within the 3-year cycle. And therefore, if that hasn't happened, we then will not issue the refugee fund certificate. However, there's been great support for the program in the sense that 12,793 state agents registered for the first cycle. So therefore, we are going to continue with the process and so that it can be professional. And the advantage of having a professional qualification is that it allows a career path for the relevant estate agents, and two, it also adds to the protection of the consumer because they're dealing with skilled professionals rather than just normal estate agents. Consumer awareness campaign has worked off. There was a big drive in the year under review in the sense that we were using media, i.e. radio and television, to make consumers aware of EAB and also make consumers aware of their rights and also make consumers aware of the value of owning property and also about the rental option and other options, and also aware of the human settlement programs that are available. So there was a huge coverage in that sense, and we continue in the 2017 financial year in the sense that now we are putting up billboards and we're actually doing radio adverts with big radio stations. In terms of pre-registration certification and certification program, again, in terms of protection of the consumer, we now issue a seal to estate agents that are registered with the FFC, so that in terms of any communication with the consumer, that seal will actually can be seen by the consumer. Through emails, etc., which means for them that they're dealing with the registered estate agent. The One Learner, One Estate Agents Youth Program is still a challenge, and Kwesi will touch on that, but we're still pursuing it. In terms of the funded program, where we're looking at estate agents who take on previously disadvantaged learners, i.e. the PAM goal in the bigger firms. This seems to be an improvement because of the awareness that we have created on this program. However, internally, due to financial advice constraints, we haven't met the targets that we've set ourselves. Just in terms of racism, discrimination, and intolerance, I think everybody has heard about the latest case where one of the state agents made a racist slur in the media. We obviously took action in that term, in that respect, by stopping her from getting a FFC. And ensuring that she doesn't trade in a state agent. We don't tolerate racism, discrimination, and it's against our code of conduct as well. The step we took was also to create an equality place where we requested support from the sector in terms of people actually pledging, and there was great support in that respect. Title Deeds Restoration Program, obviously with the department, but we do support it in terms of secretarial support and management thereof. And also with legislative review, which is a departmental process, we also support it. At the time of the financial year, the legislation was sent for public comment on the 31st March 2017. And I think recently the status is that the public comment process is finished and obviously waiting for the next process in terms of the implementation of the new bill. I'll cover the registration education in the later slides. But just to highlight on this slide, because this is a key problem in the sense that EAB hasn't had a qualified audit report for the last 3 or 4 years that I've been at EAB, and we received a qualified audit report, firstly in terms of governance was one issue, and the other issues were in terms of financial statements, which Thomas will touch on. But and to give a background to probably the root cause of what has happened is that just going back, that on the 31st of December 2015, the board term ended for all the board members, because they started at the same time, so all the board members' term ended at the same time. We didn't have a board from 31st December 2015 till it was appointed on the 6th of July 2016. So there was a period where the CEO was acting in a accounting authority level. And since then, there was a secondment of our CEO, which happened around February. And during that time, the board felt that that a Section 8A company should be formed. What a Section 8A is, firstly, it's from our Enabling Act, so they have the authority to form such a committee. But that committee basically takes over the functions of the CEO at the present time. So what we had was a management exco, and then we had a board exco. So that was a Section 8A company. And then in May of that year, the company secretary resigned, and there was negotiation to extend his period of service. However, the negotiation fell apart. So there was a period where we had an acting company secretary until we eventually, until now, that we're now actually recruiting for a new company secretary. At the same time, just after, in July, so after year end during the audit period, our CFO also resigned. Claiming certain disagreements with some of the board members. In fact, he went to the extent of going to the CCMA to claim for constructive dismissal. At that time, the auditors decided that the risk profile of the client has risen, and therefore our audit was extended for a period of time to such an extent that we only completed the audit in August
unlike in the previous year when we completed in July. So bearing in mind all that happened at that particular time, the auditors then came up with some of the matters which we had to agree to, but there was a time of obviously dispute until we decided to settle for the audit comments. So the first one, in terms of some signed minutes of the board and subcommittee meetings not made available to auditors. We are saying that we made available 28 committee meetings and board minutes, or there were 28. Yeah, we made available 28. 18 were signed and 10 were not signed. So what we're saying is that their request initially was that for board minutes, however, later on they came to us to say they're requesting signed board minutes. So at that time, there were not enough meetings held to be able to get the minutes signed, because the minutes of the board would be signed in the next meeting. Resignation of the independent audits and risk members after year end. The resignation did not occur in the financial period. There was no reason provided why they resigned. So the positions have since been filled, and the process of filling the vacancies is underway. Non-audit committee member performed management function as part of the Section 8A committee. So with this one, they're saying that the same members who are part of the Section 8A committee were also part of the Audit and Risk Committee. But we're saying also the CFO and the CEO were also part of the Audit and Risk Committee. And then the last one, those charged with governance procured certain forensic professional services. The matter was deemed urgent, and this was based on the fact that the suspense account was growing, and there was a forensic investigation done prior to that where four of the staff members were disciplined. So there was a concern that the process is still in place, so there was a need to urgently appoint a service provider. In terms of performance against targets, with the compliance program, in terms of disciplinary, we've overachieved. And that's basically the percentage of complaints received within 6 months, i.e. all the complaints received in the public in respect of the state agent, and also non-compliance received in terms of inspections and whistleblower reports would normally go through this process. And we're saying that we need to meet a standard of 6 months, and that we overachieve that. And then in terms of licensing, we've achieved the one on new registrations, but in terms of the renewal process, we haven't achieved that. And then a number of self-assessments, we have not achieved that because we only started the self-assessment process towards the end of the last quarter. Education and training, we've achieved most of the targets.
And then in terms of the fertility fund, we've also made achieved some budget targets. In terms of corporate services, we haven't met some of the targets, which is in respect of audit issues and also the ICT implementation process. We also received, we also had an audit emphasis of matter on performance information, and just generally what we agreed with the auditors is that we would put in system description for every process that we have. In terms of registration and state agents, it's just highlighting the key elements in the sense that we, in terms of issues, number of privileges issued that's increased, and also the number of firms have increased. In terms of gender, still female orientated. Profession, and it's increased accordingly. In terms of race, it's still predominantly white, where we have in 20% non-white. Just in terms of investigation, let's go over that quickly. I mean, this is a process where the complaints need further investigation. That has increased as well. And then the disciplinary hearings that we held for the guilty parties has increased. Inspections, I think we've touched on that in terms of the number of inspections, but just to say that we're also doing freak inspections as well as self-assessments. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Contrary to the norm, I'll be very, very, very short and precise.
Okay. Hey, please, you will be my hero.
Chair, with regard to the MTSF, the report is very clear in terms of there are four programs that we have set for us to achieve, which is the consumer education. And on that particular aspect, Chair, you know, without any fear of contradiction, I will inform the honourable members that we have, you know, overachieved on that particular aspect. As you may be aware that, you know, as you move along the entire country, see the billboard, you can read the messaging from the EAB to say that if you are buying a house or anything, or buying a property, use a registered estate agent. Your house is an asset, allow it to grow in value, so that we can educate our consumers about the real essence and importance of their asset. And also on radio, Chairperson, you are almost each and every week, you know, an advert on radio interviews, if you're educating our consumers around the issue of the importance of their properties, including the targeting, which, you know, of the low-cost market as well. Because the outcry has always been that our people or our beneficiaries are normally actually selling their houses below, you know, the market value and below even the contribution of government. So what was important for us was to make sure that how do we protect the investment of government by providing that kind of an assistance in terms of education. So we've been to all community radio stations in particular, where our people reside, you know, just to focus on them so that the health beneficiaries will have actually access to that information. And in particular, Chair, to say that they should be heavily understanding in the language, you know, that they understand. And also in the previous year, the Chairperson of what we've achieved, we've been on a number of articles, including, you know, the local newspapers as well. On the issue of transformation, Chair, as previously we've presented on this particular matter, and as the committee have directed us to do it, so that, look, where we have presented a number of other programs that we want to do, but the ultimate point, you know, of measuring the success of the transformation initiative that we want to come up with, you need, you know, a legislative, you know, environment that is going to pay you in this particular regard. Hence, you have directed us to say that you want to see the bill not only the bill that does not only that addressing the normal regulatory framework of the EAB to regulate the sector, but however, to deal with issues of transformation. That is why, Chairperson, we want to assure you that the bill in its current form, it will of course have, you know, certain chapters on it, specifically dealing with transformation and addressing them and how to go about achieving those particular kind of programs that we have set ourselves to achieve. Like the agency we have indicated, on the issue that we have learned about the One Learner, One Estate Youth Brigade program, it has been having a certain progress of success and also a number of challenges. But however, we are repackaging, you know, the program currently to ensure so that it responds to those challenges that we have identified, that have been identified before. But I can assure you, Chairperson, that it's a beautiful program. As and when actually we are rolling it out, actually next financial year, you'll of course actually know being exposed to the beauty of this particular program. The other program on the NTS actually has been the transactional support. Basically, Chairperson, you know that actually, you know, this program actually, you know, it's a support the affordable market, you know, development. So we have slightly achieved on that particular program because it depends on number of other research methodologies that we have to engage ourselves into. But however, we are confident enough to say that in the next cycle we'll have to invest more resources into our research, you know, in order to, you know, to achieve this particular target like we have overachieved, you know, with regard to the rest. The last one, Chair, is the issue of the title deeds. As you may be aware that I wanted actually not to refer it, you know, to DDG to say that in one of these prayer requests it should be the question of the title deed, because the title deed has been referred back to the department and therefore we don't have any standing to talk about it at the moment, and therefore the resources relating to it as well that were vested in the EAB have been referred back to the department. So I don't think that they can be in good standing to talk about this matter, Chair. As I rest.
Yeah, you rest. Are you done?
Done,
Chair. I just wanted to make sure.
Thank you, Chair. I will present on the audit report and the consolidated financial statements. In terms of our enabling act, the EAB manages and controls the Estate Agents Fidelity Fund, which is a fund that was established to reimburse members of the public who suffer loss by reason of theft of trust money by estate agents. So my presentation will therefore be on the consolidated financial statements of both the board and the Fidelity Fund. As indicated by the CEO, the EAB received a qualified audit opinion on its financial statements. There were basically four grounds under which the auditors based their qualified audit opinion on. The first basis for the qualified opinion was the recognition of revenue relating to fees for examination fees that are offered by the EAB. The actual amount of the examination fees was about 1.2 million for the financial year under review. The auditors found that the examination revenue recognition was not in compliance with Graph 9, as revenue was recognized prematurely on allocation of the examination fees numbers and not on the date that the actual examination was conducted. The root cause of this audit matter was the IT system configuration. So the system was configured in such a way that it would raise an invoice and allocate an expenses number once the candidate is successfully enrolled online, and then it will raise an invoice. We are currently making changes to the system configuration to ensure that the examination revenue is recognized when candidates sit for the actual exam, and if they do not turn up, then you can recognize the revenue if they do not have an acceptable valid reason. The second basis for the qualified opinion, Chair, related to the accuracy of revenue from the Fidelity Fund certificate. The audit findings arose from the duplicate estate agent profiles that the auditors identified during the IT application audit. The root cause of this audit matter was that there were some automated matching of ID numbers that failed during the year. Management is aware that this brought into question the data integrity and therefore implementing the recommendations that were made by the auditors, specifically on the IT application controls. The third issue that led to the qualified audit opinion was linked to an allocated receipt. The EAB received over the years monies from estate agents that did not indicate the correct reference number to enable the correct allocation. The balance at the year end was 7 million for both the EAB and the Fidelity Fund. the audit findings related to the insufficient of efforts by management to investigate the identities of the listed agents who deposited the money and classify the money correctly as revenue. We have since engaged the bank to use EAD as a pre-approved beneficiary on the system with relevant fields for reference is restricted with unique 7-digit reference number. So this will completely eliminate the issue of unallocated receipts going forward. The fourth and the final issue that led to the qualified audit opinion was the issue of the minutes of the board and its subcommittee. The issue has already been covered by the CEO, so I'm not going to focus much on it as well. In terms of the financial performance of the board, the revenue decreased from 113 million in 2016 to 117 million. Then from a consolidated perspective for the group, that's a combination of the board and the credit fund, the revenue increased from 136 million to 169 million. The ESB during the year, they incurred a deficit of about 56 million from a surplus of 138,000 in the last year. From a consolidated point of view, the deficit for 2017 was 52 million from a surplus of 4.7 million in 2016. As you can see, there were two main reasons for the deficit that was incurred. The first reason was the transfer of employees during the year from the defined benefit plan to the defined contribution plan. In accounting terms, there were some settlement and settlement costs that came to about 38 million. This represents the difference between the pension fund obligation determined on an exercise basis and the conversion credits that we have awarded to about 45 employees that were affected. The ESG going forward will realize some significant cost savings as a result of the conversion in the form of employer contributions, which will be as low as half of those that were being paid under the defined benefit plan. The second reason that led to the loss was the over-budgeting of revenue. Initially, when we did the budget in 2015, it was assumed that all listed agent firms would pay about 1,200 renewal fee for their credit fund certificate. But to promote transformation in the sector, the firms with revenue below 2.5 million were subsequently exempted from paying the 1,200 when the new regulations were published. I'll now move on to the financial position. The assets of the ESB, they decreased from 170 million in 2016 to 113 million in 2017, while those of the group, they also went down from 764 million in 2016 to 734 million. The EAB paid an amount of about 19 million during the year to the pension fund as a result of the transfer of the employees to the defined contribution plan, and this contributed to the decrease in the assets. In terms of the liabilities, they increased from 38 million in 2016 to 56 million in 2017, and from a consolidated point of view, they also increased from 52 million to 75 million in 2017. As I conclude, Chair, I would just touch briefly on irregular expenditure that was incurred during the year. Mm. We had six instances during the year of irregular expenditure with a total amount of about 1.1 million. Four of the instances were related to contraventions of performing policies around the issue of quotations and deviations. These four instances were actually picked up by management and disclosed in the financial statements before the audit. The other two instances related to failure by suppliers to declare conflicts of interest. All these cases are currently under investigation to determine the recoverability of the amount. It is also worth noting that the systems and processes in place managed to identify these instances. And in that respect, we know that we just need to make some slight improvements to ensure that we minimize or completely eliminate irregular expenditure going forward. Thank you, Chair. That's the end.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Thank you very much, gentlemen. You are all gentlemen there. CDG. You wanted to say something before I open up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Probably we should have pointed this out much earlier. There are four issues I want to draw the committee's attention to. One, it is evident that this is an entity that is under stress. The minister has taken various steps to address, on the one hand, the governance issues. The minister, I think, last month met with the board to address a number of concerns around governance. Secondly, the minister is currently reviewing the management core, in particular CEO, CFO vacancies in the entity, and taking the necessary steps to resolve those. The third area relates to perhaps what are allegations, counter-allegations, and all sorts of issues. Again, these have been brought to the minister's attention, and these are matters that are receiving the high priority from the, both the department and the minister. Chair, Property Practitioners Bill, the committee would be aware we ran public hearings, and again, this is a matter that is quite urgent from the sector's perspective, the transformation thereof, and the shifts that need to happen in the sector. The updated or revised bill will be approaching cabinet in this regard. Once cabinet approves, the normal process follows that the bill comes to the House here. Chair, the last part is relates to the relocation of the title restoration project. In hindsight, it proves that it was a wise call to shift that project or program from the EAB into the department. In fact, Chairperson, that program it's of such magnitude. I think we did talk about it earlier in the week, and the sort of radical shifts that have to happen within that program, given that it's an intergovernmentally embedded program. So that program is in the department. There are far-reaching adjustments that we are making. As I indicated, we will be briefing the committee in that regard, how the grants are shifting, how the capacities assembled, and so forth. So I just thought, let me point all of these out to the committee so that the committee doesn't find itself asking things that we could have offered to the committee. And Chairperson, needless to say, the audit outcomes and the performance of the entity are currently what is in the spotlight with the department. It's part of just stabilizing the organization, as I indicated, as championed by the minister. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, DG. That's the report, honorable member, and the addendum from the DG, which doesn't stop you asking clarity and questions. I'm allowing that now to happen. Honorable Memeze, Honorable Soli, Honorable Baha, Honorable Mubarash.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I must upfront state that we are not very happy.
And it does that when it's you speaking.
Thank you very much, well, Chair, the first thing to EAP, your presentation of the report is not very good. You were presenting and not very good. The fault is too small. also is not friendly. So we're struggling to read. What were you thinking when you didn't consider that you must read it? It's not just like you don't understand what I'm doing. So, and if when you speak, you must be audible to be heard. When you write, then what you write in must be readable.
Okay.
And now, that's where you started going wrong. And now, you see, I hear the department is saying things, but things have gone wrong here. The NPT has been doing well.
Mm.
Just yesterday.
Mm.
What has gone wrong? Then the best tissue. Something has gone wrong. So I think the department is not innocent. Whether it's the minister, whether it's the department, but there's something that is not right. If I can be honest, some of these changes that are made in department are not helping us. They result in situations where you fix a car that was functioning very, very well, and now we must have stories. There's 1.3 million people didn't understand how to do their business. That's the result of some of the changes. Why were these changes that are now leading to this report where people don't understand? We acted this way, we're supposed to act this way. Why were these changes? The department and the minister must answer.
Okay.
It's not EAP, because they were not doing changes themselves. So are we not happy? I think you understand us. Because these are funds that belong to the people of South Africa. We are here to defend the people of South Africa. These funds must help the people of South Africa. So the department must understand us. We're not here, and we think you are not innocent as the department and the minister on this one. So we're not really focusing on the EAB itself. You don't change the vehicle that is working well. And then when it goes wrong, you stand aside and want to blame and then talk about God. If there's somebody that must defend, if there's somebody that must defend, is God. God must be defended. We must do our job as per our training. We don't hide behind God, because he's not employed in this department or in this entity. So putting him is really doing something that is wrong. Let's do what we are expected to do, what God himself expects us to do. Amen. When we don't do it, let's be honest enough to say we have erred here. The issue of qualified audit is not acceptable. Even how we found ourselves there, you can just see things that were happening. You were working towards it. So the department, in the board meeting, the department is supposed to have a rep, the ministry is supposed to have a rep there. They should have known what is happening there. They can't pretend now they are surprised like all of us. We don't accept what we are seeing happening in this entity. I hope you are noting it. We are clear, the department, we are clear, the ministry. Can't say what is innocent. Not. So this is a homemade, this thing. I don't know if it's a proper English.
It's a village now.
Yeah. So we really, all the board things, we think we could have done better. The department and the ministry should have assisted the entity when, before this happened. The issue about the racism and the, we really want to impress on the entity and the department. South Africa is known, we are from an era of racism where we were divided along racial lines. So we must not allow it space again. So we must together, the people of South Africa, ensure that we distance ourselves from this, and there should be consequences for any person who is in our among the stakeholders who find himself or herself showing up that ugly head of racism. With the action, the consequences must be clear. It must not just be like a workshop of some kind. Clear consequences. Otherwise, South Africa will be belong to the all of us politically, but when we speak in terms of economically and other areas of empowerment, it will remain run by the minority, and it's not good for the future. So it's something that we must not accept. We must be united, because when we do things for every person in South Africa, then South Africa is assured of a peaceful country. But if we continue, others will be happy to be in political offices, even if the economy is elsewhere. They don't even taste it. They only see it. It just can't be right. So I think your estate agent program, I think, must be supported. The department must support it. It must move. We are disappointed because what was presented to us here was that after realizing that the property section, the property industry is still untransformed, so there was this initiative of ensuring that our children from the previously disadvantaged communities are now trained, and they were even supposed to be given some stipend. And my experience is that is not happening. Why? Why is the department playing with our young ones, those that we want them to get to this industry? That is so we think sometimes the department is not really assisting where it should be assisting the entities. So this program, I hear Ukwezi saying, no, it's coming, next year it's coming. So, this thing of being shown that tomorrow will be right, we want tomorrow to be right today. We are now 23 years in democracy. Why are we still being promised tomorrow? What happened yesterday? Because you presented it to us that these young ones are given this and that. Why are they not given in practice? Many of them have dumped the program and run and look for work elsewhere, which means it's still going to be remaining really wide. It's not helping South Africa. It's not helping our country. South Africa would be a peaceful country when all of us work together. Mm-hmm. But the moment of only one group that is enjoying other benefits, like it was happening in apartheid, there's a recipe for disaster in South Africa. Mm-hmm. So please help us. This program must be funded, must be supported, department. Education, I confirm, Chair. At least I've heard TV in radios. At least, people that they said to radio, they are very knowledgeable. They were explaining, they were showing that they understand. I was proud to hear them explaining. The property industry, the estate agency issue. So I think they must be supported. All they need is support.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Memezi. I can also confirm, Honorable Memezi, that on R21 coming from Pretoria to the airport, there is an EAB board there. I saw it. So at least there are things that you can quantify to say they are happening. Honorable Stoney.
Thanks, Chair. I think I'll start where Honorable Memezi started with regards to the role of the department. I mean, I just want to get a sense, and I think this might be better directed to the department, that there was a period where there was an arguably a reasonable prolonged period in between having a board and not having a board. And I think it adds up to a period of close to 6 months, if my arithmetic is correct, in there. And that obviously created a leadership gap at that level. And linked to that now is with regards to the issue of vacancies at the most senior managerial level, resulting in interim positions or acting capacity by different individuals, be it in the CEO or in the CFO. Can the department take us into confidence about, you know, the series of events that, you know, led up to that period? Because the appointment of a board is something that, you know, is expiring, the expiration of its term, you know, is something that should be knowledgeable to the department and the minister to set their time. And obviously there is the process that leads up to the appointment, but be that as it may, you know, when you know that a term is about to collapse within a particular period of time, you are able to anticipate that process and initiate steps so that there is no vacuum of leadership at that level for an extended period. Because if I read correctly from what the acting CEO was referring to, was that the Auditor General made an inference that that absence of a board was one of the contributory factors to the audit outcomes or the audit performance of the entity. And moving from that is the whole issue of the entity's approach to transformation of the industry by making more inclusive. And when I was looking at the demographic breakdown of the issuance of the fidelity certificate, if you look for 2016 vis-a-vis 2017, you look under what you classify as African, which I presume refers to black African. I mean, there's only been, you know, the annual difference there is 106 amongst black South Africans. If you look in terms of white South Africans, the figure there is 196. But, you know, that is slightly different when you look at the aggregate figure, you know, because in terms of white estate agents, in the previous day, both figures are above 13,000. You know, with regards to black Africans, that figure is, you know, in fact, at 4,140. So we're really moving at a total pace in terms of making the industry more inclusive if you measure it based on the issuance of those certificates. But even more incredible for me is, you know, the effectiveness of the one learner, one agent program. And I mean, I understand the whole logic of the program and its aims and objectives are really something to support. But I don't see the correlation to the output from that program and its impact on making the industry more inclusive. Although its figures are impressive, I mean, in terms of your spreadsheet there, you are indicating that there was over achievement of the target because you're aiming for 3,100 interns to be placed. You had 4,600 interns placed. You know, but I'm curious to say, does that then really go into making the industry even more inclusive when you look at the actual state of the industry at real estate level? You know, because you can't be an intern forever. Mm-hmm. You must mushroom into
and if the agent is able to practice. So does the entity through its support and initiative of this program, you know, track the development of this engine? You know, how many, because the numbers are in previous presentations have been in a reference in terms of the numbers of those that follow the, you know, the expiration of the internship program, because a certain amount of these interns, because the industry, for a new entrant, the industry is really suffocating, if we were to use that term. But secondly, I recall from previous presentations that there was reference to engagement that the entity was making with several spheres of government in terms of finding work for the interns. And I'd like to get an update on that, because from the previous presentation I recall there was an initiative with the Mahlaung municipality. I just want to get an update as to, you know, have you been able to, you know, extend the footprint beyond Mangaung, and what is engagement with, you know, other spheres of government, be it at provincial level and at departmental level. And linked to, in fact, not linked to that, the last aspect of my question is based on disciplinary action being taken for various violations at any given time. I mean, the figures there don't give a sense as to whether it is, you know, individual real estate, estate agents, or linked to particular companies at any given time. And also you can get, I mean, in other aspects you do a demographic breakdown of the issuance of, you know, the fidelity certificate. But when it comes to disciplinary hearings, you don't do a demographic breakdown so that we can have a sense of who are the culprits, you know, and where do they come from. So that, you know, we can begin to measure progress in terms of where there are violations that are being acted upon. But the other thing that is linked to this is to get a sense of, you know, when you refer to conviction, I understand in terms of the act that there will be various penalties that are linked to, you know, specific violations. You know, but I want to get a sense of were there any instances where of people have been prevented from practicing for an extended period of time. And that is obviously linked to the issuance of the certificate. But that was linked in terms of an annual figure. I want to get a sense of, too, as a result of these disciplinary, you know, hearings in terms of the conviction, what are the numbers in terms of, you know, discontinued practice going forward? So that beyond the numbers we can actually look at tangible interventions
that are there in the industry. Thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable
Malak. Honorable Bach. You must check. I
thank you, Chair. Chair, you will forgive me. I think there are issues that might be repeated, because I think there must be emphasis on those to indicate or display our displeasure in terms of what has been reported to us. One of those, Chair, is that if you look at slide number 13, I think Usoli has made reference to it in terms of the number, or is it 15. Where you have in 2017 4,140 Africans and 33,841 white. Now, something is very, very wrong. You see, for me, Chair, it's fine to say there's a bill, and that bill will address some of the shortcomings and gaps. But what happens in the interim? Once the bill is not yet passed into law, what do we do? Should we accept the status quo? hoping that the bill or the legislation will drop something from above, and resolve our problem. Is that the expectation? Because I'm saying that, Chairperson, if there are no efforts put as we speak, bill or no bill, legislation or no legislation, in 5 years' time we'll still be sitting with the same. Now, I'm saying that for me it's unacceptable. It's not something that needs to be debated. That gap is something that we must be ashamed of. You can't, in a country that is predominantly African, and find a picture that is the quite opposite of that. And then we say we are waiting for the bill or for the legislation. I think there's an answer must be given to what's happening in the interim. Because if you look, Chairperson, as Honorable Malat indicated, in 2016 it was 3944. In 2017 it's 4140. I don't even want to cite what the difference is, but I think it's bad. So I'm saying, Chairperson, there might be that kind of repetition in terms of emphasizing some of the things that are embarrassing. Because for me, I think that the fundamental question would be on parliamentarians. What are you doing given this picture? You sit in that National Assembly, argue until your face is turned blue, but in terms of implementation of programs, of transformation, this is what we see. Now, I'm saying that for me, it's an indictment. It's something that we must all be ashamed of. That's the first one, Chair. If you go on to slide number 17, I'm not sure, probably there might be an explanation in terms of compliance there. I'm looking at complaints received. It's 6529. Complaints investigated and finalized, 6857. I'm not sure, probably there's an explanation of why those numbers don't add up. But complaints received are quite less than those resolved. Or is it supposed to be the other way around? Or maybe there would be an explanation that would be provided in that part. If we go to slide 20, it talks about inspections. You will find that there have been none in Mpumalanga, none in the Northern Cape. Can there be an elaboration as to what is the cause of that? Is it because there's nothing to inspect in those two provinces? Or what is the real issue there? That's like 20. Then, Chairperson, I think that around the issues of governance, I think the department has indicated that there's been concerns around governance, vacancies, but I think let's start with the resignation of the three independent audit and risk committee members. You see, ordinarily when someone resigns, there would be an exit interview, which I think gives a reflection of what would be the causes of that resignation. And in this case, reasons are not known. Obviously, if reasons are not known, it means there's been no interview with the person who's resigning. Now, how do you then maintain all the institutional memory? How do you maintain the credibility of the institution if people just resign and nothing is done in order to get a sense of what the real causes or issues are? Because you see, you might then replace those independent auditors. They might leave for the same reasons. Because those reasons were never interrogated by the entity, and therefore you're sitting with the same problems. But you're changing faces, hoping that things will again work out better. Now, was there such engagement with those who are resigning in order to get a sense of what the reasons were? The other one is on the Chairperson on the irregular expenditure. I think Utadumemezi has alluded to it. But I think for me, the amount is not an issue. It can be 100 million, it can be 1 million. The fact of the matter is that there's irregular expenditure. And that is something that should not be there in the first place if our system, if our controls are up to scratch. Now, I don't want us to mention a figure because it's like when it's 1.1 million, it's okay. Because it's not something that is huge that can be splashed on newspapers, and therefore we can quietly get away with that one. For me, it remains unacceptable that there's, you know, irregular expenditure. Lastly, Chair, I think that I wanted to support the view raised by Utatumem is that the department and the minister must be able to give us answers in terms of what are their views, what are their indications on the status of this entity, and how do we then move forward in order for us to find permanent solutions. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Baha. Honourable Muhammad Tanash.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me appreciate the presentation made by the acting CEO and the other team members. Appreciate also the explanation given by the DDG on the stabilizing of the organization program by the minister. You see, Chairperson, when you have an instability in the organization, this is what you get. You get qualified bodies with opinion after the organization has received the previous financial year an unqualified audit with no findings. When we, a non-accounting firm, people like to say clean audit. Now it looks like we are taking the organization down the drain. And again, I'm not going to go to the reason of why, because they are glaring. Honorable members have interrogated the reasons, but to me is the instability in the organization. Because if you have an organization that doesn't have a CEO, doesn't have a CFO, doesn't have a company secretary, what do you have then?
No risk committee.
In the top, no risk committee, auditing, experienced auditors, auditing managers from the auditing committee resigned. Nobody is mitigating the risk. What are you left with? It's a skeleton. Because the organization is run by a top management. If the top management is not there, you have just a Hollywood people that are acting. Would you blame them if they get an unqualified audit? It's unfair sometimes. Well, sometimes to a normal actor, you must work as if you are that person. But really, if you lose an institutional memory at a goal of three key positions, personnel, at a goal, what do you expect? And the supporting team of auditor, risk management, manager, and the secretariat, the engine of that top, the engine of functioning of that top management, that executive. You can't say you end that period to have an organization. But we welcome the program on stabilizing. It's not destabilized, but it's very already stabilized. Mm. Stabilizing that. But having said that, Chairperson, at some stage, Chair, would like to have a minister to come to the portfolio and take us on board on the turnaround strategy for this entity. As she did with the SHRAP, so I would like her to come to the portfolio committee, and I would leave that by when to your office chair and the minister's office. But we would certainly not. It shouldn't take long time.
Mm.
It shouldn't. It's quite an urgent matter. It needs an urgent attention. And we must be taken on board. Because the problem, Chair, is that we are going to have a debate. We are going to debate this BRRR report in the House. And we'll debate them in an unformed position. So we need to be taken on board. Sometimes it's very difficult to defend the undefensible. So, the next one, Chair, is the systems in place at the moment that the management is putting. Besides what the intervention by the minister, the management says, as we are acting in those that are still occupying the position, to turn around the strategy. Don't wait for the minister. You COVID members will always say you are too qualified. So you do have skills to together with whoever is left in the board or to work on those. The bid, we are encouraged to get the bill is being amended on the public hearing. The comment on the transformation chapter thing, we've been seized with this matter with the EAAB. Maybe it's isn't it a high time that the quota system is used in the interim? It's imposed, in fact. Quota system that you shall appoint or place X number of Africans in the organization, and if it's not done at a particular time, there shall be penalty, XY penalty. And that XY penalty must be payable by when after the matter has been worked out. So I think we need that, because as Member Bacha was saying, the legislation, it's going to delay us, but in the meantime, there shall be something that is being done. And I think we are done talking. We've been talking about, since you started coming before the portfolio committee, we've been talking about the transformation at the EAAB. And having said that, Chairperson, with these words, we are not demoralizing those that are still within the system, because when things are tough, when other members are helpless, they tend to resign themselves. So hang in there. Well, you are not sinking yet. And somewhere, somehow, someone must drive this machine. So, and the people that are going to drive it is yourself. And fill in the vacant position to speed up the process. And if it means that you have to head hunt, do that. You are allowed within the law. As long as you follow all the processes, you go and head hunt people's department.
together with the group head hunt and make sure that the structure is there and people are working and prevent further resignation by all means. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Deputy, you clearly said the obviously governance issues and management core issues in the entity needs to be dealt with, and I couldn't agree with you more, because unfortunately those areas are interfering grossly with the core business of the AB. If you look at the report, without even getting into much detail, if a report would say to you the technical indicators were not measurable, already you start to worry. I mean, you are talking about people who have been doing this work for years. They have been on the, when did they now happen to put together technical indicators that you can't even measure, and they are not written down? So that somehow somebody is not doing anything in the EAP. If you look at the report, for instance, you have a situation where in March 2016, inspections that were done were 93. And in March 2017, they are 13. Obviously, that tells you that there's nothing happening. So I'm just saying, the issue of governance and management issues is a big problem. I know most of the time we sit in this committee and we would adopt minutes, 3 sets of minutes in a meeting. But how do you have N sets of minutes not adopted? N of a board? I mean, because it means they've been sitting. I hear what acting CEO tried to say, that probably they couldn't meet, but the fact that they had to generate 10 sets of meetings, it means they've been meeting. So how do you not adopt minutes? I mean, this is a basic management thing that you do in any organization. You sit, out of 28 minutes, only 18 are adopted, 10 are not adopted. Something is grossly wrong. We don't even want to get into the details. How come we ended up with these many board meetings in the first place? Because this board was only adopted in July last year, 2016. You're already sitting with 10 meetings, minutes that have not been adopted, 18 adopted. That's another issue for the day. But somebody must actually probably educate us. We lay people. This Section 8A committee, what is this? Can somebody educate us about this Section 8A committee? Because we are going to leave with a bad impression if somebody doesn't explain to us. Because in my own opinion, it looks like it's a group of board members who decided to take up management functions allowed by the legislation. I'm just saying it in a lay form, because I'm a lay person. So, how does that happen? I mean, maybe somebody must explain to us. In the light of all these gross things that have happened, you have a Section 8A committee that was running EAB as management, which is board members. So maybe somebody must just explain to us. I might be exaggerating it, I might have misinterpreted it, but that's what the report says. Maybe they try to do this in the absence of management. But is it probably part of the problem? But you know, there's another area that worries me. We didn't say much about it. There is, in the report somewhere, there is a 500,000 procurement that was done or under, which did not follow the processes, but was approved by this Section 8A committee, something like that. So we might not need answers now, but these are the things that we need the department,
and the entity to come back and explain this thing.
Mm.
Because this is gross mismanagement.
Mm.
If we leave it now, maybe there are no answers, but we do need to understand what happened here. For me, when EAB was here last time, they came here with, they told us, because the board had just been appointed, they came, the chairperson of the board came, and another board member who told us that she is chairing the transformation subcommittee, if you remember.
Mm.
And they said to us, they are going on a retreat as the board to go and deal with a transformation strategy. They will come back, because they were supposed to come and report to us. They said, committee, give us time to go and deal with this. We will come back and then present to you that transformation strategy. Because all the questions that have been asked by the members are hinging on that transformation strategy, which has never been presented. Maybe we need to be told if that strategy is in place, because that's what we were told. And then, so that we can be able then to say, when can you come back and present that strategy in line with the questions that the members have asked in relation to what is happening in that entity. Luckily for you, the issue of the title deeds is the department's problem, and the issue of the bill is the department's problem. But I don't want you to go away here thinking that you are not going to take the blame. You are going to take the blame as the people in the helm of the entity.
Mm.
I know that members are trying to be very nice and soft to you. I'm not that soft. You are not going to be able to say to me, you know, I'm struggling to understand this. Invoices could not be allocated to people. I don't understand this. Because, you see, invoices, minutes, unallocated receipts, this is basic work. But I'm short of saying EAB is collapsing. If you can't deal with receipts and invoices and minutes, what else can you deal with?
Nothing.
You can't deal with anything else. If you can't deal with a receipt, to give Nostawemas a receipt, what else are you dealing with? So I think, DDG, from where we are sitting, I know you said it is an entity under stress. I think you were trying to be very mild. It is an entity under distress. And we have to find a way of them coming back. The turnaround strategy is as urgent as yesterday. And we will have to interact with both the ministry and the department to find a way of how do we turn this around. When we came here in 2014, we found Shra exactly in the same position. And we moved very fast to deal with it. And I think that's what we need to do with EAB. EAB has been a very exemplary when we came here. We always used to say, when EAB comes to present, we all are here with no blood pressure. Suddenly, we are sitting with EAP just turn around to the west. It can't happen. It doesn't happen. Nobody just gets critical just like that. You get flu, you have a temperature, and,
yes,
you know, and then we can see that he's not well. And in that interim, before you became critical, what did the department do? And I want to agree with members. How did you allow this entity to be at the critical stage that it is in when you could see the signs that it is actually not well? So we put the blame squarely in your door. Thank you very much. We don't even think that you need to respond. It's not fair on you to respond. All we want is the department and the ministry to come back and present to us a turnaround strategy. We don't even think that we would
it will be fair on you to want you to respond. Can we have this work there on that table? Is Sisok ready? We hope that you... Okay. Please make us feel a bit better. You can probably say a few words, but I think let's allow them to introduce themselves. Please, chairperson of the board there, of the CISOS, Reverend Mehana, please pray afterwards. Don't pray before. When we've done the presentation and we've done the discussion, then you can pray. Not before.
Honorable Chair, honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, it is indeed a wonderful opportunity to be invited to come and account before the committee, accompanied by the Director General. Then we first introduce the CISOS team that is before the before you, Honorable Chair. We have Advocate Michele, who is the Acting Chief Ombud and the CEO of CISOS. We have Mr. Temba Mabuya, the CFO. We also brought some members of the senior team, Mr. Mawande Jabezwini, who is Head of IT, and also the acting manager responsible for the strategy department. We have Mrs. Ndivuo Raburi, who is our head of legal. We also have Mama Maritza Tuwatini, who's the Western Cape Provincial Ombud. And we brought one member of the board, who is Mr. Torin Holmes. Mr. Torin Holmes is the largest director of the board, but more importantly, he is the chair of the Audit and Risk Committee of the board. Just as a matter of a few remarks from myself, we will recall that there was a promulgation of the CISOS Act and Sectional Title Scheme Management Act on the 7th of October last year. This was an important milestone for us because it meant the following. It meant fully that we can regulate the computer skills industry for the first time. Otherwise, since this community schemes
CISOS Act was actually promulgated in 2011. It was for the first time that actually it was being able now to operate on that case. And then also it was now enabled to execute its full mandate of this dispute resolution. We also officially launched CISOS with having invited a lot of stakeholders on the 10th of November in Johannesburg, whereby our stakeholders had to now officially know of our agreements. Just a few operational highlights. As it should be expected, soon after that proclamation by the minister on the 7th of October, we commenced with the registration of committee schemes on the 9th of January 2017. This is a very important milestone because we cannot do our work in terms of the law without having registered the committee schemes. We therefore started with the actual mandate of adjudicating disputes, because up until then we could only consider disputes, but the actual technical adjudication started soon after our promulgation. We also commenced with scheme governance documentation services. As we know that part of our mandate is to regulate all the documents that govern the committee schemes in the country. And finally, we were able in the first quarter, the last quarter of last year, that is ending the 1st of March, we were able for the first time to collect an amount of about 30 million rand to our coffers. Because it goes with, as you register the community schemes, you also collect that money. I must say that, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, to some extent, that caught us a little bit unaware in some ways, because we were not yet in a position to have a management system that was able now, as expected, to manage this amount of money that we were getting. But we had to collect it because it goes with the registration of the schemes that the money must be collected. But that will be explained more by the executives. But from the board's point of view, it's a matter that we are aware of, we knew about it, it was inevitable. But over and above that, we are aware that as far as the audit is concerned, we have been given by the Auditor General about six findings, but all those six findings are before the Audit and Risk Committee and the board. But both the chief in Ombud and the CFO, assisted by the chairperson of Audit and Risk Committee, we will be able to give our full explanation about those things. But I need to say that before this honorable committee, our view is not to defend anything. Our view is to take very seriously what has been raised by the Auditor General and put remedial action and work towards those matters are cleaned, so that the next time we come before this committee, we are able to say we have successfully dealt with those matters. They are put in action as we speak, but more on that I will leave to the executives as assisted by the manager, the director, who is the head of the Auditor General's committee. Other than that, ma'am, we'll hand over now to the chief. Thank you much.
Thank you, Chairperson. As already indicated by the Chair, we're now going to go into the presentation of our report. I'm going to talk to the performance information, and then the CFO will talk to the financials, and thereafter I will address the remedial action that emanated from our audit. The Chairperson has already highlighted what our mandate is. Our mandate basically is to govern. We are actually a regulator in this industry of community schemes, a new entity in this area of work. And we, what is required for these community schemes to register with the CISO. It is a requirement in terms of the community schemes CISO's Act as well as the Section of Asset Management Act. So when we talk about community schemes, we're talking about your sectional title, share blocks, homeowners association, old age homes, and so forth. Wherever there is that community living where people are sharing space or sharing facilities. Now, in terms of our performance, as I said, I'm going to address the issue of performance. After our proclamation of the Act, which was the 7th of October, when we became fully operational, as the Chairperson has indicated, the registration of schemes commenced because they could not register before that registration, before the proclamation of the two Acts. And then there was the filing of schemes governance documentation, which commenced 90 days from the date of publication, and that has been indicated. And that went along with the collection of levies, which they are required now to deposit into the CISO's account. And CISO's received 1,282 new applications for dispute resolution for the year under review, with a drastic increase following the proclamation of the two acts. We've just highlighted the pages where you can find that information in terms of our annual report. And 285 applications for dispute resolutions were resolved through conciliation, 141 referred to adjudication. And thus far, we only had one adjudication order that was issued because we only managed to employ in that quarter only one full-time adjudicator that was doing all the work. 7,434 community schemes were registered in the period under review, from 25,000 initial applications received, as indicated that we only commenced started on the 9th of January 2017. 208 certificates were issued in relation to schemes governance documentation, which we do quality assurance of all the schemes documentations which are submitted by the schemes as a requirement in terms of the Act. Now, the targets for 2016-17, 600 disputes, our target was for 600 disputes to be resolved through conciliation with specific service level as per the dispute resolution model. This target was not achieved, and the variance was 315 disputes which were not resolved within the specified service period. The current dispute resolution workforce, we are unable to manage the drastic increase of the new applications for dispute resolution. It's because mainly our issue really has been capacity. As CISOs were going through financial difficulties, it was still that we were not able to meet some of this target because of staffing issues. The second objective, which was take custody and control of community schemes governance documentation, the MOU between entities, which was to be between the CISOs and the Department of Rural Development, was to be signed. This target was not achieved as the MOU was not signed, but it was more out of our control because it can be between the departments in order for us to also sign an agreement or an MOU between the deeds office and there has to be an overarching MOU by the two departments in order to allow us as DSOs to sign one with the deeds office in order to commence this work. Now, the signing of that MOU was actually now superseded as well by the proclamation of the Act. We're supposed to migrate about 100,000 scheme governance documents from the deeds office, and this target was not achieved, and due to lack of funds to implement the migration project, we needed to transfer these documents now to the CISOs, because this function has been now given over to the CISOs in terms of the new legislation. The target of cleaning of data, quality assurance, comments kept available. This target was not achieved, and no data quality assured. And there was no data quality assured as the project was put on hold, and mainly financial issues. The third strategic objective, which was to ensure that this was an efficient, effective, and sustainable organization. The target was to review the adequacy of the existing operating model, policies, processes, and procedures. This target was achieved, and this was business model drafted, developed, and approved. The target of development of the CISO's funding model, including the dispute resolution, levy, documentation fee, and service fee, this target has been achieved, and CISO's funding model is being implemented for the levy collection and service fee. The fourth strategic objective, which is to promote good governance and sectional titles and other community schemes. The target to develop and review strategy framework for community schemes governance documentation. The target was achieved and the been approved schemes governance strategy framework. The sample set schemes governance framework, 250 title schemes documentation, and 150 other community schemes. This target was not achieved. A total number of 208 schemes governance documentation for the new sectional title have been approved, and the variance there has been 192, and the scheme governance documentation compliance only commenced after the proclamation of the Act and the Sectional Titles Management Act, and that is the reason for the variance. The third target, 50,000 community schemes and their managing agents to be registered in the database. The target was not achieved, and the total schemes and managing agents registered amounted to 7,434, and 42,566 community schemes and their managing agents were not registered, and that is the variance to show that we did not meet the target. The comment is that the capturing of data in all community schemes only commenced after the proclamation of the Act. Without the proclamation, we also could not do some of this activity. The last strategic objective, which is to provide stakeholder training, consumer education, and public outreach programs on community schemes in South Africa. The target was the consumer awareness campaign, and those were achieved. Now, the reasons leading to the target not being met were mainly budgetary constraints, as I've also indicated, and the legal requirements in terms of the proclamation of the two acts, as we could not go into adjudication processes. For example, we've had a lot of backlogs of matters waiting for the acts to be proclaimed where disputes were not settled at conciliation. So as soon as the acts were proclaimed, we needed to start with the adjudication process, but unfortunately, because of financial or budgetary constraints, we could only employ one full-time adjudicator that started with the matters. That's why I indicated that we had only one adjudication matter that was finalized in that quarter. Now, legal framework is still being implemented, and that is agreement between the departments. We still need to work on that. The future operational framework, we're looking at the implementation of the revenue management system and the implementation of the revised 2017-18 APP recently which was approved by the minister is actually now beginning to make CISOs be able to be operational. We can see that we will be able to meet some of the targets that we have set ourselves. We needed to do an amendment to our APP in terms of what we have budgeted once we started receiving the levies, because we could not set any goals which we did not know how we were going to achieve without that. So recently the minister approved our revised APP in order for us to now deal with issues in terms of our mandate. We intend the expansion of the operations into more regions and provinces which are based on demand. The increasing income generation capabilities allow for improved scale and profile of the CISOs, and we need to embark on extensive education and training programs in community schemes and in the public domain. Deployment of opportunities in the system to ensure efficiency and to build industry trust is key. Now I'm going to hand over to Mr. Mabuya to present the financials, and thereafter I will talk to the remedial action in terms of our findings by the AG. Thank you, Chair.
Through you, Chair. Just looking at our audited financials, which were initially submitted to the AG by the defense in terms of the end. This was the position of CISOs with regard to our total assets. We noticed there has been an increase of around 20 million, which was as a result of the levies that we received during the latter part of 2016 and 17, which was around 30 million. Looking at our non-current assets, which were increased only by 4 million due to a decrease in our intangible asset. Because of our cash flow situation was not a good situation in the 2016 or 17 financial year. So you notice that the acquisition of assets has decreased substantially. That's why we managed to buy less assets with limited resources. And then you notice that our intangible assets, which are the license fees from buying computers, also went down. The depreciation of the existing assets also increased. And that really caused our non-current to come down to 4 million. Our total liabilities also increased by near 400,000. It's because of our leave provisions that kept on increasing as a result of the capacity constraints that we had with regard to staff. You'll notice that we had some resignation previously, and then those resignation resulted into people not to be able to take leave. So our new provision as such was reflected in our financials, which affected our total liabilities. Our total revenue, I must say that prior to the first quarter of 2016-17, we're in dire straits, but as what the chairperson is opening a statement that after the promulgation of the Act, the Sectional Title Management Act and the CISOs Act, and approval of the regulation, and then we managed in the last quarter of 2016-17 to start receiving the levy payments from community schemes, and that totaled around 30 million, which really improved the liquidity of the of CISOs. Which improved the liquidity of CISOs and also our working capital. And our total expenditure came up to around 25 million against what has been approved in the APP, which was around 30 million. So you notice that 15 million was the deficit
or the over expenditure. But in terms of section 51, paragraph 1 of the PFNA, that amount should be regarded as a regular expenditure. However, 6 million was advanced by the department, and that reduced that over expenditure into 9 million. And in terms of that section of the PFNA, section 51.1, it should be classified as a regular expenditure, which was at the just indicated in the annual report. The other issue, Chair, having looked at these financials, you will notice that under the note 11, there is a note 11, there's a 20 million that was indicated as fruitless expenditure by the AG. That 20,000 is not 20 million, that's 20,000 penalty fee from travel agency when you come say to Cape Town and you might find that you change the booking and then you get penalty from the travel agency. So that was recorded in our register, our fruitless and regular expenditure, which is going to serve to the board. Chair, I think I'll summarize the financials in our chart, but our CEO will go through the audit issues, the 6 items that the chair indicated and our action plan to take forward.
There were 6 findings by the AG, and we put together a remedial action to address them. And the first one, the non-exchange revenue and related receivables, that there were appropriate systems and processes in place. To address this finding, we are in discussions with the SARS as mandated by the board. To see that we find a system that can assist us in doing the collection and actually assisting in doing the business of CISOs in total, because we have also other aspects which include case management and as we deal with the dispute resolution in terms of our mandate. And our discussions with SARS are quite advanced. We are actually waiting for them for their response, whereby they will assist us with the, in the interim, a temporary way of collection, while we can either go out and solve the system, or if the board decides something tailor-made for our business so that we can do the collection as well as deal with the other aspects of our business to be more efficient, issuing of registration certificates, registrations, as well as reconciliations and so forth. That system is very important because I think it addresses that, especially the revenue side. And the time frame is the 31st of March 2018. The progress, which I've mentioned already, is that we need to also, once the approvals are there, to enter into an MOU with the SARS. And we have had detailed discussions whereby we can see that there's a lot that we can actually exchange even with the SARS and share, which would also benefit the SARS, because we need to get all the community schemes onto our database and the homeowners association schemes which need to register with the CISO. The second finding is contingent liability, non-disclosure of accumulated surplus. The action that we've put in place, we've made an application to Treasury to retain the funds. We've made that submission to Treasury because the AG actually found out that we have about 22 million surplus, which has happened because of the levy that we started to do, because before the end of the financial year, almost sort of was almost closing down. But now we have a surplus. So we are just waiting for the approval from Treasury. As we have indicated, we have requested to retain the surplus. And that will be utilized for the expansion of operations of CISO and addressing issues as the one that I've just indicated of getting the system. Irregular expenditure has been another finding. Actual expenditure, budgeted expenditure. CISOs now, as an action, has budgeted sufficiently to equally meet its short-term obligations. Implementation of system is ongoing to collect levies, as indicated through the start of the discussion. And the time frame is that of 2017-18. The progress made, the approved budget for 2017-18 approved and implemented, and the resource has collected, is continuing to collect levies, and the working capital and liquidity have drastically improved. The fourth finding, which is the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. The action that we have taken, a register on fruitless and wasteful expenditure, will be compiled and control measures implemented. The amount entails penalty fees in case of slight changes, as the CFO has indicated, and he has indicated the amount and the time frame for this, March 2018. But the implementation plan to commence immediately. Basically, it has commenced. We have to ensure that this kind of things are not happening again. The fifth finding is that of capacity. The action that we've put in place, because we lost a lot of people because of the condition in which the CISOs was going through, especially before the proclamation of the Act, because not much could happen and we were going through budgetary constraints as the CISOs. So now CISOs has already reinforced some of its business units since April 2017. For example, two senior accountants have been appointed, but they are going to commence their work in November. They need to serve their notices. But we have appointed adjudicators in the three provinces, because there was a backlog of adjudications waiting, as I've indicated earlier. So about in the three provinces, I think we have about 230 in total of part-time adjudicators that we have appointed. That is Cape Town, KZN, and Natal. And they've really started on the work very effectively, to the extent that some of our adjudication awards are also already hitting the courts. So, and one other aspect that we are also doing there is to engage the courts so that they know who CISOs is, and when the awards come to the courts for enforcement, they are aware that these are our awards, as well as the High Court and the judges. So the time frame there, 31st of March. And apart from the adjudicators, we also, to address the issues of capacity, quickly we have to put in place about 18 interns. But we've also advertised the positions that we are about to be, we'll be filling them hopefully now before the end of the financial year. We are started aggressively now to deal with recruitment so that we can address all the issues which have affected our performance now that we've started collecting levies. Now the sixth finding, leadership did not exercise oversight regarding financial and performance reporting, compliance and related controls, and there was inadequate review of the financial statements and the annual performance report prior to the submission of the audit. The action is to ensure that all financial and performance reporting are reviewed and recommended and approved by governance structures, the board respectively, to ensure that controls, policies, procedures are in place and documented, and a national treasury template will be used to complete the statement. This time frame will be something that we are doing all the time to ensure that we are in compliance. And the progress so far, the audit and finance committees consistently review and recommend financial performance reports prior to board approval. And policies, controls, and procedures are in place and are consistently being implemented. And now, as I said, the national treasury template will be used. I think that is basically our presentation, Chairperson, and it's to Reverend to give final words.
The last comment,
Honorable Chair and members, is that we will be aware that Mr. Mthethwa has been appointed in the department to be the Ombuds General of the Human Settlements. That created a vacancy for both the Chief Ombud and the CEO of CISOS. The board has already advertised that position. We're grateful to have Advocate Janet to act in that position. We've already advertised that position. Maybe in the next 14 days, interviews will be held, and then we will stabilize that position. And all other acting positions, they have been advertised as well, and very soon we will stabilize the executive leadership of the office. With all that, Honorable Chair, Honorable members, that is our report. We will bring it before you.
Thank you very much, Chair. PPG Lishabane had to run. I'm also have to run in the next 10 minutes or so. But thank you for those for that report. Can I get him from it? Honorable Menezi, Honorable Solomarazi, and Honorable Nangakalashi.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chairman. Now, under normal way of seeing things, as lay people, you know, new organization would start by crawling. But speaking professionally does not work that way. We expect new rooms to sweep clean. So we must be clear. Because we deal with people who should have planned before they exist. It's not like a kid who start calling. These are old people qualified. So the planning is how to avoid all these setbacks that you are now telling us. So it means there was a gap in the planning process. So it's not like you were surprised by this. So you should have anticipated. So because you understood what you were getting into. Now, the fact that it's like now, we must understand. I think I am not. I'm not understanding the fullness. It doesn't work that way. Didn't do your proper planning properly. So we are not happy with the AG's report on your organization. We think we are happy that you are giving plans how to help yourself out of it. So we really hope you mean it, but please don't pray for it. Work for it. Thank you very much.
Chair, I think you should always dash in 10 minutes so that Bachman music can be clear. but on a serious note, Chair, I just have one input. I just want to get the response to the AG's reference that there was leadership oversight when it came to, you know, the audit outcomes. As I due to the audit report, as to at both board level and at management level, what is the response to that statement, and where did that oversight, you know, occur, so that we take these lessons from here going forward and for the next financial year, as Honourable Mbeki correctly points out, that you'll be able to anticipate that there is no repetition. That would result in
carrying
issues across financial
years. Thank you, Honorable Malak. Honorable Baha, please, don't disturb Honorable Malak. Honorable Malak,
thank you, Chair. Up front, the entity has received qualified audit with methods of with findings.
And you were here when you were dealing with the other entities, and you heard one, and we are not going to repeat all what we said. All that you are saying, you must check up, pull up yourself, yourself, so, pull up your socks. and run with it. We're done with it. And chair, please protect me.
Continue.
Well. And chairperson, and I think the management here is really not doing the what they are supposed to do. And CFO come closer to certain clause of the PFMA, and they do direct you that you declare a surplus, you report it to the National Treasury, and you should have not missed that, because you are not new. We have not been recently employed. We've been on this this entity for quite some time now. And if there are clause that its interpretation is confusing you, you have a department, you have your DDG who's responsible for entities, you have a CFO from the department. It's unfortunate, Chairperson, that the CFO responsible for entities is not here today when we discuss entities that have difficulties and challenges. I mean the DDG that is responsible for entities. When we discuss entities that have challenges, she was here when we were discussing those entities that didn't have entities.
She
challenges.
She's here.
I hope.